Well, hello everybody. We're beginning here with program number 30 in the rules for magic on the astral plane. And this is rule 10, that mammoth rule, and we're on page 319. So we've been talking about the practice of harmlessness and how much it demands from us if we would truly do it correctly, and how it is the best and easiest way for the aspirant to work. There's nothing in him then which is inimical to any life in any form. And therefore he attracts to himself only that which is beneficent, and he uses the beneficent forces to help other beings. And this is an amazing discipline. Just a little review here, that it entails the constant supervision of all the activities on the three planes of human evolution and of all reactions in the emotional body, and brings all these reactions under the dominance of the illumined mind. So it's much better than shell building. It's much better than repulsion or repulsive radiation through mantra, although I suppose those have their places, especially the latter has its place. So we're inching along here, doing the best we can. Yes, and we've got 14 programs on Rule 10 so far. Goodness, all right. Right. So I'll just sort of quietly go along, musing as best I can, and hopefully from some of these thoughts there will be value to you. There is secondly a later stage wherein the disciple learns to absorb and transmute the wrong vibrations and energies which are destructive. I think Alice Bailey did a lot of this, and it is a way that maybe secondary types tend to work. They take into themselves often at much sacrifice the negative vibrations. He has no shells nor barriers. That is the problem, you know, the untouchability of those who make great ramparts around themselves, especially the first and fifth rate types, as he talks about this psychopathology of isolation, insulation. He has no shells nor barriers. He does not insulate himself nor isolate himself from his brothers. Through harmlessness, he has learned to neutralize all evil emanations. So important, isn't it? And now he acts with a positiveness of a new kind. Definitely, and with full awareness of what he's doing, he gathers into himself all the evil emanations, destructive energies, and wrong forces, and he breaks them up into their component parts and returns them whence they came, neutralized, impotent, harmless, yet intact in nature. Well, I think this takes some skill, because, you know, we do know how some healers attempt this and end up making themselves sick. They take in the disease of others, but they don't know how to neutralize. Now he acts with a positiveness of a new kind. Definitely, and with full awareness of what he is doing, he gathers into himself. This is such a Christ-like response. You know, to take upon you in a way the sins of the world. Not the vicarious atonement, but something that definitely helps the atmosphere in which the human being is seeking to evolve. Definitely, and with full awareness of what he is doing, he gathers into himself all the evil emanations. I wouldn't recommend this immediately unless one has some practice in smaller ways. Unless you feel, you know, that you've practiced this before and you can do this, there have to be safeguards, and I suppose the harmlessness and love are the great safeguards here. And he breaks them up into their component parts and returns them whence they came to the reservoir of material which was drawn upon in order to make the harmful vibrations. It's the form, you know, not the constituents. The constituents themselves, the matter, if reasonably transmuted, can be made into a beautiful form, or let's just say untransmuted material can be made into negative forms. Forms have to do with relationship and with the geometry which is imposed upon matter. And he breaks them up into their component parts and returns them whence they came, neutralized, impotent and harmless, yet intact and can be used again, I suppose. You say that this is a hard teaching and conveys but little to the average aspirant. Such is ever the way of esoteric teaching, but those who know will understand. And for them, I speak. I think there are people in whose presence negative vibrations are neutralized. And as a result, one feels the expiation, the lifting, the, well, what word can I use? The neutralization of the negativity, so that negative vibrations do lift, and one feels altogether better in the presence of such people. Another method is still more advanced and is utilized by the initiate through a knowledge of certain law of the law and certain words of power. He can command the energies to reverse themselves and return to their originating center. I think one has to be very careful about this, because sometimes these negativities can be generated by people who have no real ill will, but who almost by accident and through ignorance generate these negativities and, of course, sent back and can have quite an impact. But with this method, we have nothing to do. Well, I suppose if there was a sort of a wizard's war going on here, it would be useful. Sometimes people are under attack from truly malevolent forces, and then the initiate's knowledge of the law and certain words of power can return the missile whence it came. But at the moment, anyway, with this method, we have nothing to do. There must as yet be much practice in harmlessness and a close watch kept on its application in daily life. Well, sounds so innocuous, you know, but though this sounds innocuous and perhaps perhaps futile, it must be practiced until its value is proven. Sometimes there are factors in occultism which are so easy, apparently, to understand, and so difficult to do. And we, you know, tend to discount them. If we were given something complicated, as DK sometimes says, well, you know, a new breathing exercise, perhaps, We would do it with great hope, but certain simple things like being kind, being truly harmless, and even sacrificially taking upon oneself certain negative energies. I mean, you can, it's the old idea, even before the Christ, of Shiva drinking the poison of the world, and he has the blue throat, and I'm thinking about Ramana Maharshi and the kind of sacrifice that he may have been involved in when his students begged him to let them share in the cancer. And I think it was a lot about throat cancer, which claimed his life eventually, or his appearance. He said, "Where do you think I got it from?" So by some act of generous sacrifice, he had taken on some of their condition, and he was like a living Shiva then, with the blue throat, because he had taken on the poison. The same thing is true of Milarepa. He took on someone, tried to poison him. I think he lived through it, and the person ingenuously offered to take it from him, but I think he allowed the slightest bit of sharing, and the person was in agony and so withdrew it. There are so many subtle things that have to do with the production of disease in the outer form, or dire conditions in the outer form, and they come from internal states over which the occultist, spiritual occultist, of course, is going to have some control. I think the members of the Black Lodge know quite a bit, but their motive is much different. Their motive is individualistic, and in some ways, they're like a cancer on the whole system. You know how it is that the cancer does not correlate with the higher purpose of the organism. In fact, works for its own ends, simply to grow parasitically and living upon the organism in which it has found its place. That's pretty much like the Black Lodge, you know. We have to be aligned with purpose and executing with all of our ability plan, and then the possibility of us becoming some kind of renegade, individualistic, disrupting cancer will not exist. The right direction of astral energy can be summed up in its three aspects from the ancient book of rules given to Chelas of the entering degrees. I suppose these are the probationary initiations. And I always want to ask how ancient. I've always, from the time I was a kid, asked my parents and relatives, "How old is that? How old?" The older the better. I was always interested in how ancient a thing may be. So here I am interested as well. Maybe how many millions of years old is this ancient book of rules? All true esoteric schools begin with the control of the astral body, and the Chela had to memorize and practice these rules after he made some real growth in the manifestation of harmlessness. So this is really important. So many important things here, so much sound advice. First, harmlessness. HLN, how about that? Let's see how that might work. Okay, let's see. HLNS. Am I allowed? HLNS. Let's call it Harmless. Come on. Right, it's a term we'll be using. So first harmlessness, and then these rules from the ancient book of rules. And I remember, you know, receiving this and being very impressed by it. You know, this was 40 years ago or more when I first became a secretary in the Arcane School. And I thought, well, this is how I have to relate to the students that I'm working with and attempting to assist. This was in the days of typewriters and correctotype and that stuff, that white stuff that you put on your typing mistakes and you let it dry and then typed over and hoped that it could penetrate without the goo. When I first heard that you could use a computer and certain kinds of programs and just correct right there electronically on the spot, I was overwhelmed with anticipation as I thought, my goodness, this is going to save so much time. In those days, you know, if you had 10 students or 15 students and you had to write letters with carbons, well, it was a very time-consuming activity. So things are indeed speeding up because of the electronic possibilities. Anyway, these are so beautiful, and you know, they do speak for themselves. Enter thy brother's heart, rule one, enter thy brother's heart. I suppose his psychic nature, not his soul, but because sometimes the heart is the soul. But, you know, that part of his psyche which is sensitive. Enter thy brother's heart and see his woe, then speak. Let the words convey to him the potent force he needs to loose his chains. Loose them not thyself. Good advice for every parent, really. Thine is the work to speak with understanding. We're invoking the Piscean energy here. The force revealed by him, received by him, will aid him in his work. So there is a solicitous detachment, but a very real sensitivity. Enter thy brother's heart and see his woe. I wonder, well, Master DK says every heart hides its bitterness. I always remember that, you know, and no matter how happy a person may seem, I remember those words. Every heart hides its bitterness. Enter thy brother's heart and see his woe, then speak. Let the words spoken convey to him the potent force he needs to loose his chains, as it does take force to break the hold of vice. Let's see if I, always the same problem, you know, typing too soon. It does take the right kind of force to break the chains. Yet, you know, as Master Moria says, to give all is to put on chains, and if you give too much, it produces weaklings, he says. So I haven't forgotten that either. You know, the second-rate types, they want to give all, shelter all, help with everything, and then, but you don't want to produce an incapable person. I've heard the kids, little kids say, no, me do it, you know. Something in them protests against the parent always being there ready to tie a shoelace or help with a shirt or, you know, whatever. No, me, do it. Yet loose them not thyself, because the power to be liberated must arise from within the individual himself. But the power of speech, you know, it's a tremendous power. And the second-rate type has this, not just in the sense of intellectual speech, but the kind of empowering speech, you know, that stimulates the wisdom and the capacity in another. Thine is the work to speak with understanding. The force received will aid him in his work. Well, you know, I don't think it makes any difference who we're dealing with. I mean, you can be a secretary in the Arcane School or a mentor, you know, in the various groups like the Moria Federation and so forth, but these are key factors in our relationship, and it keeps us away from personality attachment, which really is not going to help. We have to stimulate the soul in others, and the strength of that stimulated soul will bring them the liberation that they need. And maybe we've been spoken to in this way. I mean, I'm always marveling. I think the greatest example of how to deal with an aspirant or a disciple or someone on their way up is the way Master DK writes his letters. They are so excellent. And you just see him working precisely with regard to these rules. Okay, so maybe if I highlight it, you know, it'll stand out and look more, what, memorable? Because we do have to memorize these things, right? Some things we just have to learn by heart. And if we don't, you know, they just are not as much a part of us as they otherwise could be. But of course, whatever you memorize, act upon it as much as may be possible. Otherwise, it just clutters the mind and eventually school of hard knocks, you know, fades away and you have to re-memorize it, perhaps more rapidly than before, but still it just sits there unless you apply it. Enter thy brother's mind and read his thoughts, but only when thy thoughts are pure. What would happen otherwise? You know, otherwise, you could contaminate thy brother's thought life. Then think, let the thoughts thus created enter thy brother's mind and blend with his, because his thoughts are important. You're not the dictator. Important. You are not dictating to him. It may, you know, dictators have a certain amount of satisfaction in having people follow exactly what they say. It gives them that sense of permanence, invincibility, authority, and so forth. But no, we're seeking to merge, just like the solar angel does, really. Think of it. We have our own thoughts. We are extensions of the monad, which we are. And we are also thinking on the higher planes. But the solar angel, in its projection, as I think the angel of the presence, as much of the solar angel as we can get into a causal body anyway, can't get the whole thing, blends with our own thoughts, monadically inspired. The solar angel is not dictating to us. And that's what we have to understand. Maybe there is a place at certain times for dictators, and maybe on the battlefield, you do exactly what your general says, exactly. And do not pause to question, is he right or wrong? But usually, the second-ray method is non-coercive. And that, you know, we're talking psychology here, and The second rays and maybe the fourth rays of the great psychologists. Yet keep detached thyself, for none have the right to sway a brother's mind. Now there's dictatorship. Okay? Okay, come on now. It's always... Okay, so... this must not be dictatorship. The only right there is, according to the law, presumably, justified by law, is the only right there is, will make him say, he loves, he standeth by, he knows, he thinks with me, and I am strong to do the right. Learn thus to speak, learn thus to think, and avoid the satisfaction of having someone follow exactly what you say. Because there are people like that, you know. They gain great satisfaction when people carry out their orders, whether the orders are good or bad. Enter thy brother's mind and read his thoughts, but only when thy thoughts are pure. Then think. Let the thoughts created enter thy brother's mind and blend with his. Yet keep detached thyself, for none have the right to sway a brother's mind. You know, then it's, you're operating from the outside in, like the Black Lodge does. It coerces. The changes have to occur from our own center, not exteriorly compelled. The only right there is will make him say, he loves, he standeth by, he knows, he thinks with me, and I am strong to do the right. Well, isn't that how the disciples would understand Master DK's ministrations, his attention, his guidance? How they would understand that. He loves, yes. He standeth by, yes. He knows, yes. He thinks with me, and I am strong to do the right. So this is all part of harmlessness too, isn't it? Learn thus to speak. Learn thus to think. If we were to carry these rules even into everyday life, you know, sometimes some of us are mentors or we have a specifically spiritual function. And then we say, well, now let's apply these rules from the ancient book of rules. But what about everyday life? Maybe in everyday life, where those we are talking to are not necessarily going to be students of spirituality and so forth, this still could be extremely useful. Now, here there is a difference. You know, you're entering, but let's just say this is blending. So let's just say that blending is different from entering. Blend with thy brother's soul and know him as he is. This is really spiritual discernment. You know, what's behind the obvious? What's behind the personality? Can I discern the soul? Can I somehow use that fluid we call consciousness and blend with thy brother's soul? This is a fine art and very subtle, I think. Blend with thy brother's soul and know him as he is. Only upon the plane of soul can this be done. Let's say the higher mental plane. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of his lower life. So, you know, So only enter and do not blend elsewhere. Then focus on the plan. Thus will he see the part that he and you and all men play, and that vision will be very strengthening, restorative. The great vision will bring spiritual health. Okay. Thus will he see the part that he and you and all men play. Thus will he enter into life and know the the work accomplished. I did memorize these, in the old days, and I probably can reconstruct them pretty fast. And I recommend, of course, the third ray is the Lord of memory, and I have a lot of it, but still, learning things by heart, you can do much more with them than if you're always tethered to the original text. So, use the old method too and carry with you, for the sake of application, some of these ancient rules and dictums, which are so very valuable. And there's a note, he says, appended to these three rules, these three energies. And note, he calls them energies in this case. He does not call them forces of speech, of thought, and of purpose when wielded with understanding by the chela, who is at least an initiate of the first degree, that's what a chela generally is, and blended with the awakening forces of his brother, who has not perhaps yet reached the stage of the chela, blended with the awakening forces of his brother, whom he seeks to aid, are the three energies with which all adepts work. Now, speech, thought, and purpose. Well, our best example is Master DK. And where we are at the moment in terms of our relationship to him. That's what he's using, pretty much so, right? Wouldn't you say? All right, so I'm trying to home, and there we are. Speech, thought, and purpose. Enter thy brother's heart, enter thy brother's mind, merge with thy brother's soul. Occultism is wonderful. Spiritual occultism, obviously. This is a knowledge of the true causes of things, and after having struggled blindly through for so many millions of years on this planet, we can finally get a hold of things and really make the intelligent, loving, purposeful progress that we as soul-inspired human beings are meant to make. Finally, we can do this. And the great sacrifice of the elder teachers and the expense of energy on our behalf. Well, may we learn from that and may we rightly expend in the future that kind of energy on those who need it and who are up and coming, We'll have our chance, whether we become solar angels or are working, on the second path, where we're helping the astral plane become a healthy place, working from the cosmic astral plane, or whether we're on the path of the planetary logoi, or even to become a ray, perhaps. There's all kinds of destinies that can lie ahead according to our nature, and we will be more and more useful in the universe, in ever widening spheres. Could be quite exciting, right? Once we overcome this ignorance of being buried in matter and thus forced into a kind of perceptual materialism until we throw it off. These speech, thought, and purpose. Well, think, you can wield these all the time. You can wield these, speech, thought, and purpose. We're always talking, we're always thinking, and well, are our motives known to us, and do we act purposefully? Finally, from the monad comes purposeful. Well, from the soul, which is an extension of the monad, but from the monad comes purpose within our particular planetary logos at first? And do we live the purposeful life? That is a question we have to ask ourselves, and more interior examination will be needed as we fit this instrument to be more and more useful. It is almost impossible to translate these ancient formulas into adequate terms, but the above rough paraphrase will convey the idea to the illumined. Are we among them? I think we are, you know, sufficiently among them. Stay with the teaching for a while, stay with it for years. I remember when I, this little bookstore called the Metaphysical Bookstore in the 1960s was run by a little old lady called Hazel. Well, you know, with a name like that, you know, you think maybe she'd have a bit of a witchy past, but who knows? She's certainly sold these metaphysical books, and I bought a lot of them. And whenever I was in Chicago, I would always go down to the metaphysical bookstore. She was quite psychic. And it was impossible to ignore the presence of that great shelved range of blue books. I was into Theosophy at the time, and it was pretty much The Secret Doctrine and other related writings, but I did pick up a book, and I forget which one it was, and I opened it and said, Atma Buddhi Manas, and I saw a triangle. Well, that was my hint. Of course, I put it back at the moment, and I said to myself, how can any human being write this? Well, later I learned that the particular human being had a little help from Master DK. And then there came a time in my life when it was a transitional thing. You know, I was living one life and ended up with another. I was traveling a long way from Fargo, North Dakota, in the middle northern part of the country, all the way to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to see a Masonic opera called The Magic Flute, in which I had once sung badly. I was the high priest, and I couldn't hit the low notes the way I should. Embarrassing. Okay, but whatever. There it was. There it was. And I went to see it, and it's a Masonic opera. It's a wonderful opera. It's all about the tests that you go through of fire and water and other tests as you're trying to join the Brotherhood. And on my way back, I stopped in Olcott. I think it's Olcott. That's what they call it. It's in Wheaton, Illinois. It's at Theosophical headquarters. Had to reach high for those Bailey books. Because, you know, Theosophists don't always look kindly upon Bailey, but they feel the need at least to have the books in the library. So I brought home, you know, I saw them. I had to really stretch, you know. And I brought them home to North Dakota, a few library books, and that was it. You know, that was 1971, I think, something like that. And, well, they might as well have fallen off the shelf and hit me on the head, you know. It was all DK from that time, without ignoring Blavatsky, of course. I guess we all have our experiences with running into the great teaching. And that was it for me. I recognized somehow the vibration and remained committed ever since. And that's almost 50 years now, I guess. So grateful for those life-changing experiences. I had a great teacher, too, before that time, who was a Masonic Rosicrucian and an old man who lived well, in the University of Michigan campus, and he would just talk to people. He had been retired and had the white hair and the gray beard and about six planets in Pisces with Leo rising and a load of first ray. So I really got lectured, but probably ultimately the wisdom ray was his soul ray, and talking to him changed my life and reoriented me entirely, or at least got me back in touch with with the spiritual past, because I've been raised in an atmosphere which was strictly intellectual and not very spiritual, and made the mind everything. But I guess I needed that too. Well, we're put in places where we are to meet the circumstances we need in order to grow. And one day, we will one day our circumstances we will be positive to the circumstances. It's a Leo Uranus thing to be positive to all circumstances eventually. It's what's possible for the initiate, and then we can really carry through the plan and the purpose without being overwhelmed by circumstance. You know, that Saturnian thing that gathers around you and forces, confines you. But Uranus will break those bounds or bonds, boundaries and bonds, and make it possible for us really to carry the plan through into manifestation. Which, you know, what better thing is there to do? What does DK tell us? You know, we have to, first of all, serve the plan, and then serve those whom the plan serves, and then serve those who serve the plan. I think that's the order. But anyway, you have to serve the plan. That's number one. So that's where our studies come in, and we try to really understand what it means. What is the divine plan, and what may be our practical role within that divine plan? So we've got a rough paraphrase here, but on the other hand, it's very beautiful, and we might as well memorize it. Blend with our brother's soul and know him as he is. Only upon the plane of soul can this be done. Elsewhere, and watch it, you know, let's watch it. Otherwise, we get those codependent relationships, you know. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of his lower life. Then focus on the plan. Thus, he will see the part that he and you and all men play. Thus will he enter into life and know the work accomplished. So this is this third one, tremendous. Oop. Tremendous empowerment. Right now, we're not very powerful compared to what it's possible to be. My saves are always failing, and I thought it's because I have too many, you know. But let's just see if it, yeah, it looks like it's saved. All right. So, the present and the future. That's our next thing. But first, these rules sum up the few thoughts which the average aspirant needs to grasp about the right direction of energy and for which he is ready. There's other things about the right direction of energy, but he's not ready. Are we the average aspirant? DK tells us, well, better act as if you're the average aspirant. Otherwise, you're going to create an attitude of separation, and that's no good. It's a violation. And it's falling into the trap of the great heresy of separateness. All right, onward then. The present and the future. Thus, we have seen the place that the tiny sentient unit employed by an individual human being plays in relation to the greater whole. And I think he is talking of the human astral body or sentient body. What is SB? Sentient body, that's what it is. SB. Well, why is that not working? Aha, I see. All right, let's correct it. So SB will be, unless, yeah, well, it does say sentient body. So replace, but okay, it already exists. It's okay. SB. And why isn't that working? Why isn't that working? There it goes. We have noted the various forms which astral evolution assumes. We have also recorded some of the sources from which astral energy comes. Now, you know, a lot of these forms have been fairly negative. Fear, depression, but also the desire for happiness and the desire for expressing the animal appetites, and finally the desire for liberation. And there are sources, you know, the planetary astral body and certain planets decaying or incarnating near our particular planet within our solar system. And there are other sources. The descending Aquarian energy is an important one. And there are a couple of other things I mentioned earlier. We have found that each of us is immersed in a sea of sentient forces which have their effect upon us because, under the law, we have appropriated for our own use a portion of that universal energy through the medium of which we are en rapport with the whole. So, you know, and even if these astral energies are passing through, we don't necessarily notice them. There's a lot of the high ones we don't notice, and if we have reached perhaps a certain degree of elevation, there's certain low ones that we just deflect. And we are not hooked by them, nor do we respond to them. We've transcended that stage. One of the types of astral energy upon which we did not touch emanates. Well, we mentioned it. We are told from the heart of the sun. Now, you know, that's a very Leo kind of source, Leonian source. And is it the soul nature of the solar logos? In one way it is. And is it a subjective sun found on the cosmic astral plane? Okay, maybe. And, you know, all these things can be connected. And is it found on the second ether, the second cosmic ether, or we call it monadic plane, on the cosmic physical plane? You know, the heart of the sun has to make its way into our system, passing through our monad, soul, and so forth. But it is, in a way, an analogy to our egoic lotus as a heart of the sun. I cannot, however, touch upon it at length, owing to the inability of the human brain to understand it or the human heart to appropriate it until such a time as the heart center is open and functioning. All right, this is interesting. Now, Neptune is the home of the solar flames, and we find at the second initiation, Neptune is very active, and Leo may be involved there. And we get this heart of the sun energy, which is kind of a selfless love that begins to recondition our astral body. You know, remember, Leo, that it's of the three fire signs, the one most associated with love, the one most associated with soul. This stream of living energy can nevertheless be sensed in a large way, though not as yet appropriated in its pure essence, and we call it the love of God. Okay, well, Leo, Neptune, you know, the esoteric ruler, the love of God. So I guess it's time to get that little bracket again. Okay, HOS. So HOS. Oh, it's all in caps. Okay. Heart of the Sun energy is the love of God. It is indeed that free-flowing, outgoing, magnetically attractive force which leads each pilgrim home to the Father's house. Well, if it leads us home, you know, we must say we are loved from above. And this attracts us towards home. It is that force which stirs the heart of humanity and finds expression through the medium of the world avatars, through the mystical yearning found in every human being, through all movements that have for their objective the welfare of humanity, through philanthropic and educational tendencies of every kind, and in the natural world, so-called, through the instinct of protective motherhood. All right, so this is, we have here, you know, there follows a good description of the Heart of the Sun. I'll read it again. It is that force which stirs in the heart of humanity and finds expression through the medium of world avatars, through the mystical yearning found in every human being, through all movements that have for their objective the welfare of humanity, through philanthropic and educational tendencies of every kind, and in the natural world, so-called, through the instinct of protective motherhood. So even, well, you know, even the animals are experiencing this without knowing about it. But it is essentially a group sentiency. And let us remember, you know, it's a soul energy in a way, from a much higher soul, a much higher state of consciousness. The soul is group conscious. And only in the coming Aquarian age will the true nature, its true nature, find correct understanding and right appropriation. Well, you know, this is the sign opposite to Leo. And we can, you know, think of Leo in relation to the Heart of the Sun, but Aquarius has that kind of resonance too, and the radiation of it, the distribution of it far and wide, will be a characteristic of that that age. I touch on it here as it is one of the factors to be considered. Only those, however, whose hearts are opened and lifted up unto the Lord will know whereof I speak. So here's a hint. This is an occult hint. It's not just a nice poetry. Whose hearts are open and lifted up unto the Lord will know whereof I speak. And maybe we are touched occasionally by waves of this kind of attitude. If we could sustain it all the time, we would, you know, prove maybe a higher degree of initiation, which is then is ours at the moment. It is needless for us to concern ourselves with that which lies far ahead of the race. Though sometimes, you know, in all honesty, he does mention it as an incentive. Immediate problems call for attention. Problems which are personal or racial and which all concern the control of the astral vehicle. Right. Opportunity is offered to demonstrate in chaos the potentialities of ego or soul. You know, triad, the true ego, the soul. The triad is the soul in a way, but the monad is the soul. Everything has consciousness. Everything has soul. One way or another, either very limited or very capacious. There's universal soul and so forth. But it is opportunity to us now is offered to demonstrate in chaos. And who could deny it in the present age? the potentialities of ego or soul and its capacity to control and dominate in this little sphere of influence we are called upon. Therein lies for all aspirants at this time the peculiar effort of the coming days, and I would, for your guidance, make certain suggestions to be followed by you or not as deemed wise. So, suggestions coming. And I think, you know, if we've been with Master DK for a while, we know that it's wise to follow his suggestions. I'm trying to think, you know, I've, in a way, in this life anyway, been with Master DK for almost 50 years. It's, you know, it seems like a long time, but it's just a drop in the bucket. I guess in maybe, I was aware, but, you know, really getting into it, 1971. By 2021, it'll be 50 years. I'll have a little celebration here. We must remember that every aspirant is a focal point of energy and should be, in his place, a conscious focal point. Not just a myopic point, doing things without knowing what you're doing, based on habit patterns and not really conscious of the implications of what is being carried out. In the midst of the whirl and storm, he should make his presence felt. Well, that's a pretty strong exhortation. I guess we all feel like we live in the whirl and storm. The law of action and reaction works here, and often the great ones, foreseeing the need of just such points of inner contact in periods of world unrest, such as the present, gather into certain localities those who are aspirants to service. And we might say New York was one of those places where DK was asking AAB to hold monthly ashramic meetings, for which the text to be studied were the 14 rules. They act as a balance and aid the general plan, and at the same time they themselves learn much needed lessons. So, you know, at those meetings, the idea was to be as much as possible in the ashramic state of consciousness. And since Alice Bailey herself, you know, was definitely within the ashram and in a high place relatively as the coming secretary to Master Kutumi, and certainly the amanuensis for Master DK, she could help the attendees achieve that level of consciousness. The effort on the part of all aspirants should not be to resist and repel the pressure or to fight and ward off. There will be pressure. You know, I've had to say that so often to people. They may not like it. But in the book Heart, I think it is, pressure is the law of existence. I found that quote, you know, and, you know, do I find it again? That's the question. It's always a question, do I find it again? AB extracts, and if I look up the word pressure, let's see what I get. Here it is. And it's from Heart, I guess. Thus, prepare people for an inevitable intensification. This does not mean that the teaching propels one to tension, but that this pressure is the law of existence, the pressure from the sources above. And that's what it is to carry the burden, you know. That's really what it is, to carry that burden. So, the effort, such a method centers the attention upon the not-self and leads to added chaos if we just try to fight and ward off even the beneficent pressures from above, because they make us uncomfortable. The effort should be along the line of an endeavor to make contact with the higher self and keep it stable and steady. Well, this is so good. You know, what I'm going to do, I'll make this an hour program. I'm going to come back here and just read this, as it is so important. One thing after another turns out to be important as we read A Treatise on White Magic. You know, I got myself so involved with cosmic fire and other things that for some years I may have forgotten the value of this foundational book, which, of course, is not a simple book whatsoever. No, it isn't. So the suggestions are coming, and I'll put this here, and this will be the end of number 30, and we're on page, this is 10.14, and we're going to go to 10.15, and number 31, we're still in rule 10. Definitely in rule 10, because it's such a big rule. And we're on page 322, so we went from 319 to 322. And this is the 22nd of August, and we're at page 322. All right, friends, that's all I can do for right now. But, you know, ponder on this. What a wealth we've been given. What a gift. Of course, attention, assimilation, application. Are those three A's? Is that a mnemonic? Oh, goodness. If it is, I'll put it down. No, that's not what I want. I want this. Okay, so this is the one, and not this. Anyway, I will put it down. A little triple A. Attention, but I think I forgot the middle one. Attention, assimilation, or absorption, and application. Maybe it's the first mnemonic I've ever created. Master DK is really good at it. Okay. We will see you soon. And many blessings. And study hard. And, you know, all the usual things that I tend to say at the end of a program. We'll talk to you soon.